Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Wednesday, October 30, 2024. The UN Human Rights Commission on South Sudan says the implementation of transitional justice has delayed in the country.
Part of the architecture of transitional justice and what completes it is criminal accountability, because some of the most serious crimes have been committed during the conflict that broke out in December 2013 and have indeed continued.
And the spokesperson of the National Police Service says his office has no information on the detention of a press secretary in Juba.
I am still searching for more details about the issue of Alex, because up to now, it is not reported to me in the security report, and I cannot only focus on romance that I am hearing from people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The two candidates for the U.S. president are making what they call their closing arguments to voters in this final week before election. VOA's senior Washington correspondent Carolyn Presutti brings us the sights and sounds from two rallies.
In this final week, the presidential campaigns take on the air of a court case.
Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
These are closing arguments, with voters acting as the jury until Tuesday. Former President Donald Trump making his case about the economy and immigration in Madison Square Garden, the epicenter of New York City.
Kamala Harris has shattered our middle class. After years of building up foreign nations, defending foreign borders, and protecting foreign lands, we are finally going to build up our country, defend our borders, and protect our citizens. It's called America First.
The 20,000-seat arena was packed. Some voters waited overnight to get in.
It'd be kind of cool to have a role model, but honestly, I think Trump will do a really good job with the administration and with foreign affairs.
He's outspoken. He's unscripted. And he resonates with me.
I really see that Trump is going to take us to the next level.
For her rebuttal, Vice President Kamala Harris chose the ellipse in Washington with the backdrop of the White House, the future home for one of the presidential contenders.
It is time for a new generation of leadership in America.
Harris laid out her own vision for America, seeking to strike a contrast with Trump.
It is time to turn the page on the drama and the conflict. I will enact the first ever federal ban on price gouging on groceries. Cap the price of insulin and limit out-of-pocket prescription costs for all Americans.
Again, tens of thousands attended.
The first woman president, I would love to see that in my lifespan.
I am a gay man, and me personally, I like to keep my rights.
She says she supports abortion rights, pro-choice, a woman's right to choose, and I believe that she will ensure that there is not a national abortion ban enacted under her presidency.
Given how close the race is, the election may be too close to call on Tuesday night. Lawsuits are already underway in some states over ballot counting and voter eligibility. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News on the ellipse.
Still on U.S. elections, with 6 days left for American voters to head to the polls, Kwame Ofori speaks to some South Sudanese at home and in the diaspora on how they feel about the U.S. elections and how it impacts them. The third guest is Lillian Rizik, a South Sudanese-born American based in Virginia.
This U.S. election, this particular one, is very heated one. I mean, people are trying to focus more on the issues rather than personalities. And that is exactly what my focus is. So I have certain issues that are of importance to me. And I am just looking forward to see who might be articulating or addressing the issue that I'm concerned about more.
Okay. And you said there are certain issues that are of importance to you. Could you expatiate on those particular issues that are of importance to you during this election period?
Well, for example, I would like to see more what are the candidates' views or what are their plans when it comes to student loans. This is a major issue for me. During Biden's campaign, he had a promise about student loans forgiveness, and we were able to see a little of that is being implemented. But also the issue of immigration, which is very important. So I'm yet to see who has the clear plan in terms of solving the issue of immigration in the United States.
And do you feel the election has any impact at all back home, moving away from how it impacts you right here in the United States?
Well, we're hoping that, because the United States has a long-standing commitment to peace building in South Sudan. And we have seen that during the pivotal role that they played during the Comprehensive Peace Agreement in 2005, and that lasted until the independence of South Sudan in 2011 and or before South Sudan got into internal conflict. So we are anticipating that the priority of the new U.S. administration to improve its relationship with the current leadership and to prioritize certain issues, areas that remain fundamental to its foreign policy.
South Sudan was scheduled for an election this year, but that unfortunately couldn't come on. You experiencing the elections here in the U.S., knowing at the back of your mind that, you know, back home, that couldn't happen for you and people back home. How does that make you feel?
Well, it all depends on the governance system that we have in South Sudan, as well as we have in the U.S. The U.S. has adapted the principle of democracy from the very beginning. So for the election in the U.S. is a norm. It's part of the norm. But for South Sudan, that's supposed to be a transition to democracy. Democracy is not yet understood or is not yet being adapted fully in the governance system of South Sudan. So I personally wasn't disappointed that the election did not happen, because I knew it was not going to happen, because we have to have certain things in place in order to have a credible election.
And to end, my last question to you is, if you could speak to either of the candidates running for presidency here in the U.S., what question would you ask them and why?
I would really ask them, what is the U.S. policy towards South Sudan? Currently, there is not any clear policy towards South Sudan. The U.S. has a policy towards Africa, but in particular, South Sudan, there is not a clear policy. So I would ask them, what would be their U.S. policy towards South Sudan? I personally anticipate and expect that the new administration that will come in place to push for sustainable peace effort, and they have to improve their diplomatic relationship with the country in terms of engagement, and to push further for peace agreements to be implemented, and especially issues related to human rights violations.
That's Lillian Rizig, a South Sudanese-born American based in the U.S. state of Virginia. She spoke to my colleague Kwame Ofori this past hour from the state of Virginia. The outcome of the U.S. election and the possible changes in Washington's foreign policy are of special significance to 3 million American expatriates eligible to vote in the next week's presidential elections. In few places is that outcome more tangible than in Ukraine, where a few thousand Americans have, for various reasons, chosen to leave after Russia's full-scale invasion. For VOA, Licia Bakalets spoke to some of them and has this report from Kiev.
Among those casting absentee ballots from overseas this year is Anna Bilakur, one of an estimated 6,000 Americans living in Ukraine. She is a social media manager with the Kyiv Independent, an English language online publication, and she says her personal connection to Ukraine is a deep one.
I've been living in Ukraine for just over a year now. I was here a bit on and off before the war started, and my dad is Ukrainian, so I had kind of roots on that side of my family. I felt that if I wanted to be a journalist covering this war, I had to be here.
Bilakor says it is heartbreaking to see Ukraine used as a talking point in U.S. political campaigns because she believes the struggle of Ukraine is being left out. Polls this year by Gallup and the University of Maryland suggest a slightly majority of Americans surveyed think the U.S. should keep helping Ukraine despite the politics.
When I talk to people at home on both ends of the political spectrum, I do hear a lot more empathy for Ukraine, a lot more concern than what is presented on certain news networks.
Bilakor plans to vote absentee online. She says no matter the outcome, her resolve will not change.
I hear Kyiv and NATO and various other places saying that whoever's elected is who we will have to deal with. So I try to take that attitude of, you know, whatever the outcome, we're going to keep fighting.
Stephen Moore shares that view. He is a Republican and former chief of staff on Capitol Hill who now lives in Ukraine and works as a volunteer. Moore founded the U.S.-based NGO Ukraine Freedom Project, which provides humanitarian aid to civilians and non-lethal equipment to military volunteers. He says Ukraine needs the support of both Democrats and Republicans.
There is not a world where Ukraine gets what it wants from the United States through the support of only one party. This does not happen. So Ukraine needs to be bipartisan. There's about a 70% chance that the White House and Congress will be divided.
Moore believes America has never been so divided in his lifetime, a belief backed by polls in the run-up to the election.
The Russians are getting what they want in this election cycle, which is chaos and disorder in the United States.
Moore cast his ballot in his last trip to the U.S.
Right now, we are in a global war. And the only people acting on that information are our adversaries and the Ukrainians. So this election will dictate how America responds to a global war.
Other experts like John Sennett and his wife decided not to vote this time. Sennett works in airline logistics and volunteering in Ukraine as well. He says for him, neutrality is key.
For us here, it's just a waiting game. You know, don't be too vocal about who you like or who you don't like, because whoever wins is who we're going to have to work with.
Sennett says his Ukrainian friends often ask him to predict the election outcome. He simply responds, it's America, and nobody will have answers until it's election day. Lisa Bakalets, VOA News, Kyiv.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Today is Wednesday, and our words of wisdom comes from the Lango community in Eastern Equatorial State.
Hello, VOA. I'm Bertin Blomole. We're proper for my roots, the Lango of South Sudan, from Equatorial County, Eastern Equatorial State, which says, Agnat Aliza Hokori, Nakori, Oboye, Nazinge, Nobe, Hobogino. Translated, do not book the tail of the giraffe while the giraffe is not dead. Meaning, do not hope for something that you are not sure of. Thank you.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan says the situation in the country has not changed. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan briefs the UN General Assembly Wednesday on South Sudan government's recent decision to extend the transitional period and also discuss an implemented revitalized peace agreement, economic and social challenges, and the ongoing lack of accountability for serious human rights violations in the country. Commissioner Bernie Afako tells me that the UN General Assembly should engage South Sudanese leaders to deliver on their promises.
We have been requested in our mandate to monitor the human rights situation in South Sudan, to collect and preserve evidence of violations and crimes for purposes of accountability, to support transitional justice in South Sudan, because that is a commitment of the South Sudanese leaders in the peace agreement to establish a truth commission a reparation authority and a hybrid court. So it is important that our work is directed towards supporting those bodies so that they can hold accountable perpetrators, so that they can chart forward a path of reconciliation, healing and recovery for South Sudan.
Commissioner Afoko, let me take you back to the issue of transitional justice. The elephant in the room is the formation of the hybrid court. Give us a report card on how far that front has progressed since the signing of the 2015 peace agreement.
I think it is important to start with the fact that South Sudan has now introduced a bill in parliament. It should soon become law to establish the Commission for Truth, Reconciliation and Healing and a Compensation and Reparations Authority, which would address the root causes of the conflict, define how South Sudan can address questions of accountability, reconciliation, and cohesion. It would also respond to the many victims of the violence since 2013. But part of the architecture of transitional justice and what completes it is criminal accountability, because some of the most serious crimes have been committed during the conflict that broke out in December 2013 and have indeed continued to be committed in South Sudan. And the hybrid court is important because it will bring accountability for those who have not just perpetrated these crimes, but who have been responsible, who hold the highest levels of responsibility for mobilizing others to commit these crimes and for ignoring perpetrators who are under their command and responsibility.
UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan have been making a lot of visits into the country, meeting the authorities and presenting their findings to the authorities. And to be honest with you, at some point, the Minister of Information, whenever you present your report and he's asked to comment on it, he says that the commission is operating on a template. Every year in, year out, it's just bringing the same report. What do you say to that?
We're definitely not operating on a template. The reason why you might see the same themes emerging in our reports is this question of impunity, and that the same perpetrators continue committing the same types of crimes across the country. But again, even where there have been inquiries appointed by the president and others to look into those violations, including extrajudicial killings, nobody has been held to account. And this is why we've been calling upon the government and the African Union to set up a hybrid court, which will then begin to deal with some of these violations. We've been urging the government to strengthen the criminal justice system. Many parts of South Sudan are without courts, without higher courts. Most people rely on traditional mechanisms of adjudication. These are not designed to deal with the most serious crimes. So the state and the criminal justice system is simply absent. And in those circumstances, it's difficult to have accountability for victims. So the response to violations is that the criminal justice system must be strengthened, and there must be a political will to hold accountable perpetrators, even those that may be occupying high office in the government, so that nobody is above the law.
We have been covering stories on what you are saying.
Indeed.
And the question that begs an answer here is, the authorities have been reminded of their obligation towards the citizens, and several reports have been written to that Indeed. Effect. And you are going to talk to the General Assembly. What is your ask?
Our ask is that they engage with the leaders of South Sudan and insist to them that they implement their own commitments. These are not externally imposed standards and benchmarks. They have a constitution, a transitional constitution. They've not yet implemented a permanent one, but it has the elements derived from the peace agreement for the recovery of South Sudan, that they should unify their rival forces into an army that will protect citizens, that they should resource the criminal justice system so that it holds people accountable, that they should exercise political leadership in what is a difficult period for the country already, which is facing economic challenges, humanitarian challenges. But they should also address this question that we've been raising regularly in our reporting, that the question of corruption, economic mismanagement, is one of the drivers of conflict. And the repercussions are that the social, economic and cultural rights of the South Sudanese people are not fulfilled. Their rights to health, the rights of the children to education, they are falling behind on all of these benchmarks. South Sudanese children have some of the lowest levels of education in the world, particularly for the girl child. Very few of them complete primary school, even fewer secondary school.
That's Benny Afako, member of the UN Commission on Human Rights in South Sudan. He spoke with me from New York on Tuesday. Still on rights issues, the spokesperson of the South Sudan National Police Service says his office has no information about the press secretary of the governor of Western Equatorial State, who is reportedly detained in Juba on allegations of defaming the speaker of the National Assembly on social media. Matia Samuel Timoteo reports for VOA from the state capital, Yambio.
Alex Daniel Digi, press secretary of Western Equatorial State Governor, was detained 2 weeks ago and is reportedly held at a police station in Juba. Elias Osini, executive director in the office of Western Equatorial State Governor, declined to comment on Digi's arrest. Pascual Daniel Digi is the detained press secretary's elder brother.
It was on the Sunday.
It was on Sunday of 6 October 2024. Alex called me that he is going to Juba. I don't know whether he was going for the government duty or for private. On 8th, he just called me that he is arrested. From there, he called me in the evening that whatever they told him is that he wrote some allegations against top officials of the government. We managed to send one of the families to the police custody there. They confirmed exactly that he is arrested. And with all those days, he is under investigation. We are waiting government or for the investigation to come out with the points whether he is arrested because of work he has been doing with the Honorable Governor, or it's a personal issue.
Been doing with the Honorable Governor, or it is a personal issue.
Colonel John Kasara Kong, spokesperson of the South Sudan National Police Service, says his office has not received any report about Digi's detention in the capital.
I am
still searching for more details about the issue of Alex, because up to now, it is not reported to me in the security report, and I cannot only focus on rumors that I am hearing from people. So I have been waiting from the report from the CID of whereabouts of this guy, and the things have not yet neutralized up to now.
Nothing yet neutralized up to now.
Press secretary in the office of a speaker in the National Assembly in Juba says Speaker Jemanu Nukumba has no powers to issue an arrest warrant for an individual who allegedly defamed her on social media. She says Speaker Dunu has no hand in Digi's continued detention in Juba.
It's not because of the speaker.
It's not because of the speaker. If it's that information that says the speaker is the one that made him be arrested, that is incorrect. It is a complete fabrication. People say a bad thing about her every day. What you need to investigate is the criminality. For him to say something bad is breaking the laws of South Sudan. So it is disrespectful because that's not how we do things in our culture. But some people always deviate from culture. Whoever has arrested him finds out the true cause of his arrest, and she wishes him nothing but the best.
South Sudan Penal Act 2008 under Section 289, Subsection 2, provides that whoever defames another person commits an offence and upon conviction shall be sentenced to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 2 years or faces a fine or both. Alex Daniel Digi was appointed in 2021 as Press Secretary of Western Equatoria State Governor Alfred Futio. In August this year, the State Minister of Information, Morsel Isaac, appointed Digi as Acting Station Manager at the government-owned radio station Yambio FM. For VOA News, I am Matia Samuel Timatio, reporting from Western Equatoria State Capital, Yambio.
From legal issues, we go to health matters. A pathologist says many women in South Sudan lack awareness on how to self-examine and protect themselves from breast cancer. A consultant doctor at Juba Teaching Hospital says most breast cancer patients who come to the hospital are already at a late stages of the disease. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai reports from Juba.
October is International Breast Cancer Awareness Month, also known as Pink October. Health experts and activists have planned events around the world to educate people about the disease. Dr. Stephen Lokudu, a consultant pathologist at Juba Teaching Hospital and a lecturer at the University of Juba School of Medicine, says South Sudan does not gather data on cases of breast cancer in the country.
Most of these patients who come to us usually age group, which are women above 50 years of age. There are some few who are less than 50 years, and usually, as I say, people don't have that enough knowledge about how to detect their breast cancer, because normally when a woman goes to take birth, at least she checks her breast. If there's any abnormality, anything that she feels like running inside her breast, then she has to do screening and do mammogram.
Breast cancer can be detected at an early stage through a mammogram test, which is an X-ray examination of the breast to diagnose the disease in women who either have experienced breast issues, such as a lump, pain, or nipple discharge, as well as for women who practice preventive health and have no breast complaints. South Sudan has limited medical facilities for specialized diagnosis for terminal illness. In 2017, President Salva Kiir opened the country's first kidney hospital in the capital, Juba. The El Cardinal Kidney Center offers services to kidney patients nationwide. But breast cancer is a different story. Dr. Makelina Lino, who works at Juba Military Hospital Surgery Department, she says many women in South Sudan shy away from talking about breast cancer. She says the overwhelming majority of breast cancer patients in South Sudan seek medical remedies when the disease has already overtaken much of their bodies.
I've seen a lot of patients who are coming with breast cancer. And the most challenging thing is they come in late stages, so whereby it's too late to do anything. So I think there is a gap in the awareness about breast cancer that we need to identify it, and then we need to also know what we can do about it. This month, October, is the month of breast cancer, but we don't see a lot of things being done to women. A lot of awareness is not being there.
Dr. Francis Oromo is a senior lecturer at the University of Juba's Faculty of Medicine and the managing director at Oromo Diagnosis Center. He says his center has diagnosed patients with breast cancer. He says that the lack of awareness about the disease in South Sudan has led to countless fatal cases.
All women with family history of breast cancer should frequently visit their doctors and narrate the story so that they are guided. The mother will be guided and the children, the girls, will also be guided. I think these are very key points for people to follow. As the women, also to form some sort of society, a group of women who are fighting breast cancer by themselves. We should not be led by men, because we understand women understand themselves better. When they make that call, I think everyone will not be shy. They will start, narrating whatever story they have.
World Health Organization says 2.3 million women were diagnosed with cancer, with 670,000 deaths worldwide in 2022. WHO says certain factors increase the risk of breast cancer, including age, obesity, the harmful use of alcohol, a family history of breast cancer, a patient's history of radiation exposure, reproductive history, tobacco use, and postmenopausal hormones therapy. For VOA News, I'm Juliana Shepai, reporting from Juba.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, October 30th, 2024. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Bob Bass, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us.